You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with David Randall. David K. Randall's new book is The Monster's Bones, The Discovery of T-Rex and How It Shook Our World. We're following our protagonist, our hero, Mr. Bones, Barnum Brown. He has been dispatched by his superior at the American Museum of Natural History to go out west and find me bigger and bigger monster bones. We're in competition with Carnegie himself. I must deliver eyeballs. I must get people into this museum. In 1900, he goes to Wyoming. In 1901, he goes to Colorado. These are okay expeditions, but they're not what they need. They're not something new. They're not something that they can use the word monster and convince the newspaper writers who are following this bones race that's underway. Now we come to 1902, and like a great Hollywood mystery, there's a photograph. A man named Hornaday, who eventually becomes, I believe, the Bronx Zoo sponsor, and a photograph taken by a man named Sieber. Who is Sieber? Who is Hornaday? And how do these clues come to Barnum Brown, David?
So Hornaday is traveling through Montana, and this is a time when Montana is pretty much as far away from the life of the East Coast as you can think. It really feels like it's a different world. Essentially, you're traveling to Australia or something. And Hornaday is out there to document some of the life, deer and other life, natural life, that he comes across. And he reaches a farm of a man named Max Sieber. And Sieber says, you know, if you're looking for natural life, you should see this, what I have out here. And he takes a picture of what looks to be a Triceratops skull. And this is something that is of great interest when Hornaday comes back to the American Museum and shows this to Osborne, who is desperate for a Triceratops. Nobody has mounted one before in a museum quality exhibit. And he thinks that this is something that can bring people in the door. Brown, a few years ago, had found the American Museum's first dinosaur specimen, a Diplodocus. But Osborne is realizing that the hardest part of paleontology, for a museum at least, isn't necessarily finding a specimen, it's also mounting it. It can take, you know, 7-8 years to build the armature and put essentially all the puzzle pieces of the bones back together and to a lifelike specimen. And he thinks that finding this Triceratops might be a shortcut, essentially.
The shortcut, however, has a photograph that doesn't actually have a location on it. So that we have a photograph, just like a detective story. Have you seen this? Do you know what? Do you recognize what this is? Barnum Brown has the photograph. How does he put the photo together with a location? How does he solve that?
So he takes a train to Montana with a photograph with him. And once he's there, just like a detective, he starts asking people and trying to track down the clues. Have you seen this? Does this look familiar? And eventually he does track down Siebert, and it's essentially finding a needle in a haystack. And he reaches this Triceratops, and it's in no way is it as good as Osborne hopes. So he has to be the bearer of bad news. But he tries to make essentially lemonade out of lemons. He's like, you know, I'm already here. I'll search what else is here. And nobody's ever really searched through Montana before. He's the, really the first one to go into the Hell Creek region. So he goes to this town. It's called Jordan, Montana. And it is thought to be the farthest town from a railroad station within the country. So it's really as far away as you can get on the map while still being part of the known world. And that's where he starts searching.
A detail here. Did Lewis and Clark reach Hell Creek? Did they ride of Hell Creek?
They did. They did go through that region. And they wrote about most likely what, when you look, modern researchers, as they look through their notes, say they most likely found dinosaur fossils. They just had no idea what they were. They thought that they were whale carcasses or whale bones or some other sea creature that had somehow ended up in these ravines or canyons. But they most likely did see dinosaurs.
What is important to consider now is the center part of now North America was a vast inland sea. And Montana is at what would have been at some point the shoreline of that inland sea, which is why it is so fertile for finding dinosaurs. Creatures go down for water or work the feeding grounds near water and die in the mud or the soft clay, and then they're preserved. However, we know this from geology. That was not available. The continental drift, the plate tectonics, all that is going to take the later part of the 20th century to solve. This is something where Barnum Brown is out there without a guide. He's at the frontier of paleontology right now. And as David says, he's going to make lemonade out of this. So he's got the summer. It's 100 degrees plus. He's mocked by the local entertaining crowd, I believe, because what he's doing, well, you can imagine it makes no sense to anyone hanging out in northern Montana. You're looking for bones? I've got some bones for you. Come over to my place. He eventually finds something called the Sheba Mountains. He's frustrated. It's hot. He doesn't know whether there's anything here, and he believes that he's found a possibility, and he sends for dynamite. What was the possibility? What made him think this? Is it like he's found water? He's got a natural instinct for it?
So one thing that made him so good at this was that he could read the very subtle variations in color between rocks. The color of a rock suggests what it was millions of years ago. You know, a certain shade of brown, this might have been mud. A certain shade of gray, this could have been the bottom of a riverbed. And this is most likely places where you could find fossils, because this is the most likely conditions for fossilization to occur. So he sees this place which he calls Sheba Mountain. He sees this variation of color. He says this might be a likely candidate. And I think this is an important part of it too. He's very frustrated. He wants something to happen. And he was not somebody who typically used dynamite. That was one of his skills, is that he was very strong, he was very patient, and he knew how to work rock and get through it without resorting to something that could blow up whatever was in there. In this case, though, he says this rock, he realizes the rock is incredibly hard, and he has a feeling that something's under there. So he lays the dynamite, and he, you know, goes back farther enough, and he essentially blows the top off of a mountain.
And a hole opens up, and there are bones in it. And he recognizes that these bones are unusual, or does he? Does he sense right away that he's never seen anything like this?
He does. So he opens up what is essentially a time machine to 66 million years ago. He's the first human to ever lay eyes on what we now know as the T-Rex. And he looks down and he notices right away that this is a species that has not ever been described by Cope or Marsh during the Bone Wars. This is something completely new. And on top of that, it's carnivorous. And carnivorous dinosaurs were especially prized by museums, because those were the type of dinosaurs that the public gravitated towards the most.
He writes to Henry Osborne, "Quarry number one contains the femur, pubes, humerus, three vertebrae, and two undetermined bones of a large carnivorous dinosaur not described by Marsh." That's the selling line. Does Osborne, when he gets this letter, recognize they've hit the jackpot, or is that going to take proof?
It takes some proof. He, at the end of that season, Brown is able to unearth the T-Rex, and he's able to send the specimen back to New York. But this is, to send a dinosaur back, you have to enclose it, and essentially very strong plaster of Paris, that you don't want it to crumble on the way back, on the journey back. So even when Osborne, at the end of the season, has the T-Rex in his possession at the American Museum, he doesn't know what he has. He writes a letter to Brown, essentially chiding him, saying, we need to work harder a lot next summer because the Fields Museum and the Carnegie are pulling ahead of us.
Yes, we're going to work harder. We're always going to work harder. But the fact is, he's discovered the gem itself. Now, there are missing bones, there are missing pieces. So when we come back, the search will continue for what we now see. And David tells me the T-Rex you see at the American Museum of Natural History comes from Brown and Brown's work in the early part of the 20th century. The book is The Monster's Bones, The Discovery of T-Rex with Dynamite, and How It Shook Our World. David Randall is the author. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Truth is, Ohio, when it comes to broccoli salad, you got the secret ingredient on lock. Miracle Whip. You know it. Your neighbors know it. Heck, everyone from Toledo to Portsmouth knows it. That tangy zip of Miracle Whip is the reason why Ohio's broccoli salad runs circles around everybody else's and never gets winded. So here's to you for keeping it bold, keeping it zippy, and keeping Miracle Whip right where it belongs in all your favorite recipes. Buy Miracle Whip at your local grocery store and get your tang on, Ohio.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino.
This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.